You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 493.
Where come the prophets from the Bible, you say? Who saved the people, get the blessings I pay? Striking the wicked, made them slither and hide from the mountainside. Gather the people, both young and old, preaching the truth about the lies they told, curing the sick with only a touch of his hand, all across the land. Some people say, you gotta throw the past away.
Hello and welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name's Adam White. I'm recording for you here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. At least I hope I'm recording for you here, because I don't know if any of my equipment works. John, I don't know about you, but I guess it should come as no surprise to our listeners that this is not the most professionally assembled show as far as, let's say, equipment goes.
You know, Adam, I was thinking about that. I was listening to, I'll name names if you guys want me to. I was listening to a movie podcast, and I listened to a whole lot of podcasts, and it infuriated me. Because it was all very well produced, and I think we could probably increase our production quality. But everyone was like, hey, welcome back to the Zippy Podcast. And then some other guy said something like, you know it's raining outside. And I'm like, oh my God, I want to strangle all these people. You know what I mean?
And well, so, I mean, we don't need to get more obnoxious than we are, but like, I'd like it if things would work from one week to another. So my problem here that I have is that I have a recording setup that works for me, but it is incredibly precarious. And if I do anything, or if the computer has a problem and shuts off or something, or there is some switch in the 300 physical and digital switches that make all this work that gets flipped. And then we sit down to record a show, and I go into GarageBand, which is what we used to record. Maybe that's the problem. But I'll go into GarageBand, and all of a sudden it'll be like, your last audio input doesn't exist anymore. And I'm like, I don't know what to do about that.
Man.
What do I do? And there's no solution except just to fuck around for an hour and a half until everything works again. So I don't know if you're aware of this, John, but there's a pandemic happening, and that means that everybody is sitting around on a million video calls all day long for various purposes. So my office has organized, one of the things that we do is we have a little happy hour that happens every Wednesday afternoon. And so I'm on there with my boss and my coworkers and all that, and we're having a drink and shooting the shit. And everyone starts chipping at my boss because he has like this horrible connection, horrible mic and all that. So he starts talking about, oh, I got to get a mic, and I got to get a filter and all this stuff. And I'm like, well, I got all that stuff. So I walk over like an idiot to my laptop, which is not my work computer. And I rip all my recording equipment off of it, and I drag it over to my work computer where I was on this video call, and like hold it up like an idiot and be like, this is a mic. And like, I don't know what I was trying to prove except to like show them that I have this giant mic. And then I went and I put it all back together tonight to do this show, and nothing worked. So I don't know if this is even working right now. We'll see. But yeah. So on the show that may or may not happen, we have returning to us, thankfully, Hallie Bullitt from, you're in the mountains, right?
I'm in the mountains, you guys. Like,
you're hiding.
Middle of the mountains. Like, it's like mountain weather. Like, it's, I'm really, like, I've really taken this quarantine thing to, like, new heights. I really, it's, yeah. So hello from the mountains.
And then we have Mr. John Gentile in Philadelphia, which is, it has some hills. They're not mountains.
Yeah, the Philadelphia area is more hilly than, say, Maryland, but less hilly than San Francisco. Hallie Bullitt, have you started whittling yet, now that you're in the mountains? How's your whittling skills?
I don't know. It just seems to rain every day. Like, I wouldn't even want to like go outside and like collect the wood to go whittle. It would just be like soggy. Like, the mountains are really like really fucking giving it to me right now. It's like rainy and cloudy and cold. And like, when I left New York, it was a shit show. I mean, I was like in Queens. It was like sirens everywhere and super freaking scary, but it was really nice weather. like it had just started to turn spring. It was like nice weather. And now I'm up here in the mountains and it's fucking cold. I'm like right back in winter, dudes. So, you know, but I'm safe. So, you know, there's that.
Except for various mountain threats.
There are mountain threats. That's true. Like, and also like, they keep saying that like the wildlife are like really like reclaiming like all the territory because there's less traffic and everything. So yeah, like I actually do feel like I could just like look out into the backyard and see a bear.
Hallie, what would you do for real? Like what if you looked outside and you saw a Wendigo outside? Like what would you do?
Wait, what's a Wendigo? Is that a new thing I have to be worried about?
I believe
you have to be worried about the Wendigo. So
what is that?
Well, the Wendigo is that, I mean, the, at least according to the story, if a person in a certain area of the world that is afflicted by the curse of the Wendigo happens to consume human flesh, then they become a Wendigo, which is some sort of hideous forest creature.
It's like a big white haired Bigfoot that eats people.
At least the one that shows up.
Yeah, I think it's basically zombie Bigfoot. Yeah,
okay. It's Bigfoot adjacent.
Will say so there's a tradition here in the mountains of tree trunk bears. Right? Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
I have no idea what that is, I'm afraid.
Okay, so like a tree trunk bear is like you like have an artist come and carve your tree stump into like a big bear statue.
I know what that is. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, dude, there are so many tree trunk bears here and I'm so bored that I've started taking pictures of all of them. So you know, whatever. If you follow me on Instagram, keep your eyes open because I'm going to do a poll of like the best Instagram, the best tree trunk bears of the Adirondacks and you may want to weigh in.
Hallie, what's your Instagram?
Hallie Bullet.
Well, we will all check it out. Hallie Bullet, I just opened up – I just started an Instagram, and I'm getting bummed out because people, like, will put up a picture of, like, the Bad Brains, like, the Bad Brains record, and it'll get, like, 5,000 likes. And what I've been doing is I've been putting up, like, these rare records and weird records – not rare, weird records that I have, and no one gives a shit. And I get so embarrassed and mad because I see Brian Gorsinger of Nightbirds. He's got all these like super like rare first presses and people are like, oh my God, you got the first press in Black Flag, damage, you know? And I'm like, here's this Weird Alice Cooper record that came with a pair of panties on the record. And I get like two likes and no one gives a shit. And it's making me feel bad. So I don't know if I should keep trucking on Instagram and hope it picks up or just let it go. But if it does pick up, so what? I'm not getting anything out of it. Or am I?
Well, see, here's what you got to do, John. I have constructive Instagram criticism for you.
All right.
Because I've seen what you have been doing, and I feel
and no one cares.
I feel your pain. I know no one cares. So I am probably similar in that no one cares, except that I can parachute pictures of children into it sometimes, and people seem to care about that. And
why should put other people's kids?
No. See, so you can't do that without being creepy. But here's what you can do. Ever since I've been working from home because of the quarantine thing, I've just been like taking pictures of what's on the turntable and putting it on there and saying something about it, right? And I was doing that for no reason other than I'm never sure what to Instagram. But then I've realized two things. These are both really advice that my wife has given me, and they have both kind of played out. The one is, and this feels goofy, but hashtag the shit out of that stuff. Right. And I know it feels like I got to go through and do that. Right. But I started whenever I posted a picture of like just some record that I was talking about, I hashtagged it with like vinyl or whatever. And I was and then maybe the band or something like that. And I'll get all these like crazy rando vinyl people that'll just show up and like something all of a sudden. And I'm like, okay, all right. So there's people that are looking for that. I will give you that, wife. I will give you that much. But then the other thing that I've realized, well, the other two things that I've realized is that things got a lot better, especially when you're taking pictures of records, if you paid attention to your lighting. Like try to change it up, try to make sure you don't have like glare from the overhead lights showing up on the cover or anything like that. Like you need to take a little bit more effort towards like set dressing what you're doing. You know, weird camera angle this time, shit like that. And that just gives it something a little bit more dynamic instead of it just being like the flat cover of the photo. But then the other thing is that
a lot of work.
It's not too much. It really means like cock the phone to the side and stand over here, right? And then the next time, do it from this angle. But the other thing is that every once in a while, you got to do the selfie thing. You got to stick your face in there.
Mm.
You got to show up. And sometimes I've tried to do both, or I'll just like, it's me and I'm holding the record I'm talking about or something like that. But, or it's me and it, you know, I'm sitting there with my giant quarantine hair holding a cup of tea. But like those things I think are dumb and goofy as I'm taking them, but like everyone engages with them because ultimately people care more about you and the records that you have maybe in the context of you than just the media. At least that's what it
seems.
I
don't care about people. All I care about is records.
Well, I'm just saying, you got a spicy, like the John pictures of John are going to be like the salt.
What if it's a picture of John holding up the record? See, now you get everyone's interest all in one fell swoop.
Halle Bullet, Instagram semi-fame. Is that something worth striving for? Should I strive for it, or is it a fool's errand?
Oh, I don't know. My Instagram is so weird, and I need to warn people before they try to follow me on Instagram that really mostly I post pictures of my baby. And my baby, incredibly popular on Instagram. I mean, incredibly popular.
1,000 likes.
Wow. He will sometimes get 1,000 likes. And if I post a picture of myself, that'll normally get about 200 likes. So I'm not, my baby is much more popular on my Instagram than I am. And I get it. He's very, very cute.
It's a cute kid, people.
John, you can do it. John, you can do it. If for no other reason, it seems to be an internet community that has slightly less visible Nazis in it.
Well,
it's the only one I'm on. I don't trust any of the other ones. Twitter, Facebook, I'm off all of them. Instagram, I like. It's just pictures. I don't know. I don't feel like anyone can like really do that much damage to the world with just like, yeah, pictures of kids and records.
See, you're going to drive by a billboard in a week and it's going to have your kid on it and there's going to be a cigarette photoshopped into their mouth and they're just going to be like, Halle Bullet's child smokes Laramie cigarettes.
Smooth enough for a baby, made for a man.
I kind of want to see that now, actually.
So, John, before we get into whatever happened this week, do we have any mail?
We do. You can always reach us at, well, first of all, we also have a Facebook page now, The Punk News Podcast on Facebook. Go check it out. You can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. This is from Nathaniel. Hi, podcast. First, I really enjoyed episode 491 where you all discussed different albums. John, you sent me down an entire metal rabbit hole, starting with War's War Party. Thanks for that. More importantly, Tom and John, please discuss Danzig Sings Elvis. Here's my quick take to get you going. The arrangements and mix are bizarre sounding, making the album feel more like a collection of demos than a finished product. However, Danzig's voice is spot on for the most part, and I think he proved his true love of Elvis. I think this album will probably become a cult favorite, and hopefully it will get a proper remix / remaster at a later time. What are your thoughts? Nathaniel, we are running, count them, three Danzig Sings Elvis reviews at the site, maybe Monday. I'm waiting to hear back if Danzig is going to do an interview, and if he says no, then we will run the reviews. If he says yes, then we're going to hold back on the reviews until we do the interview, because I don't want to be rude. So anyways, Nathaniel, you will get more than your fair share of Danzig content coming up. Thank you for listening and checking that out. Here's an email from Tesseract. Here's what Tesseract has to say. Quarantine, quarantine, quarantine. Give me escape from my living hell. From Tesseract. There you go.
I respect that.
John, did you see that?
Yeah, maybe we try to turn the volume down on the quarantine content.
I mean,
it's so hard though. Everything comes back to the freaking quarantine. Okay, I'll stop talking about it. Go on.
Like it intersects. Like we were just talking about, you know, previous letter writer very much enjoyed John talking about Guar. But then what did Guar do today? Is they posted a video encouraging people to drink bleach because it's their drug of choice. So
that's funny. That's very Guarish, and I approve. That is extremely Dave Brockish. I think that's good.
It's like you can't get away from it. But yeah, I know we enjoyed, I think, doing the talk about random records that have nothing to do with the horrible news episode. So we will likely do more of those. And I have no idea if we'll have one that we'll do. We'll probably fit one in before 500 happens. I think, John, we got a few.
I think so, man. It's been a slow news, understandably. So we'll probably do another special. Hattie Bullitt, if you have any ideas for a special episode, a very special episode that you'd like to do at the Punk News Podcast, let us know and we'll do it. We've got one more email. This is from Nisea. I'm sorry for not pronouncing your name correctly. Punk News Podcast, I'm enjoying that you're having on more and different voices lately. I like all the original hosts, but it's nice to hear different people on. Please keep having people on. Hallie and M are great, and I like hearing them and a diversity of voices from Nisea, something like that. I hope I got your name right.
Awesome. Thanks, N. I'm just calling her N. We're on an initial basis now.
Right. As always, you can reach that podcast at punknews.org.
Please don't make us pronounce things, world. It's really not our... not our cup of tea. It's not play to the strengths of this show. Before we get to any of the various news that happened this week, Hallie, you were telling us before the show here that you're pretty excited about some of the stuff that is going on in the Recess Records universe. So you want to touch on that?
You know, it's not like I've got my finger on the pulse. It was like I love Recess Records, and I actually realized this week that it had been a while since I like checked in on Recess Records, and so I sort of like got to do a little bit of catching up. But maybe, you know, maybe there's other people that need to catch up too. I just couldn't believe how much good music was on there. Like they had a new-ish, meaning like and very end of last year, put out like a record by the Globs, which is Mike from the Bananas, and like anything Bananas related, I have a lot of enthusiasm for it. And this record is so good. And just like good recent-ish releases that I think are all worth checking out. And then you know, I didn't realize that Recess had opened up, and this is like, again, I'll try not to talk about quarantine too much, but like a Recess had just opened up like a new in San Pedro where they're based. Todd, it looks like, had just opened up a new like bar, like wine bar, coffee shop, record store in the front and music venue in the back. And so who knows, you know, hopefully that'll, he'll be able to hang on to that through the, you know, quarantine. And, I'm dying. If this place is still open, I'm dying to get to San Pedro to check this out. Cause any venue or, like record store run by that guy, honestly, has got to be so awesome. So Todd also is doing like a quarantine podcast, which is just like so worth listening to. He's not doing a lot of talking. He's mostly just like playing music. A lot of it is Recess Records stuff. He has the most impeccable taste, just a good dude, like punk, like just the most punk of any of us. I mean, to my knowledge, this guy has never had a job that wasn't like skateboarding or punk rock. So I think it's like a good thing to support. So if you want to go buy Recess Records and like buy a record or listen to his podcast, he has a thing on his podcast where you can leave a tip. That is like, you are truly supporting like a label that is just like punk to its very core, completely DIY, a guy that's just sweet and has always been like such a positive influence on the scene and is such a talent. And these basically like his podcast episodes, I think he's put up like four of them now. That's basically what I listen to. That's like my new, radio station. I just like listen to that. It's like so, so good. And actually maybe I'll use that as an excuse to get into my song I want to play. Because there's a release by, I'm again talking about pronunciation. Don't make me pronounce things. I believe this band, you say Nos Da, but it's Isaac from The Arrivals and Jimmy from Toys That Kill and a bunch of other bands. And I think maybe one of the guys from Pale Angels. But yeah, this band Nos Da, like I'm loving this album. I'm like absolutely loving it. Like I can't remember actually the last time that I really just from beginning to end just completely enjoyed like a whole album as much as I'm liking this. So yeah, this is like a bright, it's been a, like all this recess stuff, and it's been a bright spot in my week. So, you know, check it all out. And this song that I like by No Sta is called No Haircut.
Antisocial behavior? What's that?
Saying No Stas? Is that what we decided it is? Again, pronouncing things, right?
It's No Stas.
Oh boy.
Oh, so, and Todd Congelier, this podcast that he's doing just for now is called Terminal Island Lockdown. Terminal Island Lockdown. You can find it on like Spotify or wherever you find your podcast bullshit. Okay, sorry, go on.
I feel like the naming of things has gotten very good during the quarantine. Like there's like every once in a while I'll see someone will release like an album that they've, you know, recorded in their bedroom, or they have like a weird internet art project that they've created, and they all have cool names. It's just like that's the one shining silver lining of the whole
well, people have a lot of time to think about shit.
I guess, yeah.
A lot of time to ponder, you know? Weigh their options.
Well, speaking about people that had a lot of time to think about shit, we're talking about X. So the classic LA punk band X. So they have released a surprise album. The album is called Alphabet Land. You can grab that on Bandcamp right now. The album's out on Fat Possum Records, who has the vinyl release for it. And this is the band's first new album that features their entire original lineup in 35 years. So it is quite a span of time since this incarnation of X has been with us. And for them just to kind of like sneak the record onto the internet is a really interesting play, because, you know, you'd expect people to be making a bigger deal about that. So the band did get back together in, the early 90s, and released a record called Jesus. It came out in 1993, but that was not the full original lineup like this one. So it has been a number of years since X in this form has been together, and they're back. So you can go check the whole thing out. X is a band that I personally have like the worst track record of getting into. So I'm probably the last person that should comment about this in relation to their, you know, catalog and history and all that kind of stuff. So I'm going to shut up. John, what's your read?
Well, Hallie, would you like to go first, or I'll go first if you want. It doesn't make a difference to me.
No, I mean,
All right, I'll go.
Yeah, you go.
I'll go first. Listen, I like all the first wave punk bands, and X is considered one of the primo first wave punk bands and the primo Danger House band. I'm not trying to be cute. I'm not trying to be which word I'm looking for. Which word was counter on purpose? What's that word? Contradictorian. Whatever that word is. I'm not trying to
contrarian.
Contrarian. That's it. Thank you. I'm not trying to be contrarian. I like X. I don't love X. Out of all the Danger House bands, Howard Worth, Black Rennie, the Metro Squad, The Eyes, Avengers, Germs. Rhino 39, I think that's the next band. I mean, the Danger House band, maybe not. Anyways, the Weirdos. X, to me, always seems a little too gentle, not quite enough explosion, not quite enough damage. I think this record is a solid record for them to do, and I know people want to like X, and people like X, and that's cool. To me, X just always seems to be the overrated early band, and I think it's because it's the most gentle of kind of the first wave bands, you know, where I think the Avengers are like way better than X and more explosive and more insightful. I think what it comes down to is this: in the punk world, a lot of people want accessibility. I mean, a lot of people like to think as punk at being extreme, but what a lot of people actually want is accessibility and just one step away from radio music. And I kind of think that's what X is. And so I like X. I don't love this record. I think it's a great return to form. I think this is the kind of record X fans want. But as for the JJG, I'll respectfully decline.
Allie, do you intersect with X at all, or are you on the sidelines too?
Well, I feel bad because now I feel like none of us is really like huge X fans. because I can't claim to be one either. It's not, but I put myself in Adam's category. I just sort of feel like maybe I've been a little bit lazy and like checking out the whole back catalog. But I saw X at Riot Fest when I went in Philly, which was, I don't know, probably like 7 years ago, and was totally blown away. And actually this album I think is great. I was like actually pretty shocked. I think this album sounds awesome. I think their voices sound great. I thought it was like, I was super, super impressed actually.
You see, I feel that like laziness is a big part of it for me because I genuinely enjoyed a lot of the post X, or at least like the projects that the X principals did in their latter day stuff. Like I haven't listened to it for a number of years, but I remember I didn't mind the stuff that Xene Cervenka had recorded for Nitro back in like the early 2000s, just because it was contemporary when I was like really being into in my daily punk news writing mode. So when she had that original Sinners record come out, it was like, hey, like one of these, you know, there's a new record by one of these, you know, classic punk people that I'm learning about to be a better writer. And here she is. And I've liked a lot of John Doe's like various country related projects that he's put out because he has, I mean, even when he was young, he has the best voice for being like a grizzled old hunk of leather. Right. So there was a record that he recorded that was just nothing but like covers of old country songs that was backed by the Sadies, which is this kind of like crazy alt country band out of Toronto. And so there was this John Doe and the Sadies record that came out that I was just all about for the longest time. But that never translated into like, oh, I need to go plumb the X back catalog. And I don't know why. And I feel bad now because that was an X record, right? It wasn't even like they did 3 months of promotion before this so that I could sheepishly, you know, run onto iTunes and go like, oh, fuck, I don't know enough about X, right? And do all my research. It's just like, no, it's like suddenly there is a new X record. Have an opinion on it. And I'm like, oh, God, I don't know what to do. So, yeah. So now I guess a question then from a boring, I'm not going to talk about the music. I'm going to talk about the marketing standpoint. Did this thing show up suddenly because everyone's locked up and what else are you going to do? Or
that was my understanding.
Because that is there's a lot of stories that I keep reading about where it's young bands, right, that have the rug pulled out from under them because of this. But usually it's stories whereas, you know, they had a record coming out and now they can't tour behind it. So they're going to do an Instagram live stream instead, because what else are you going to do? Right. And it's stuff like that. It's usually not something that's on the scale of, you know, X's first record with their original lineup in 35 years. And just like, here it is. Like, well, that's pretty crazy to me that you have all that time and then it gets tripped up right to the finish line. I don't know.
I think what is, I mean, honestly, in the current musical climate, and the current musical climate, irrespective of coronavirus, which is making it even more complex, nobody knows how to promote a record now. And you can't blame anybody, because, you know, like, if you remember Beyonce, I think Beyonce was the first huge record that was just dropped out of nowhere. Or maybe it was U2 with that record that, like, was on everybody's iPhone. And so it used to be that, you know, records had a 9-month lead time, and then it was a 3-month lead time, and now it's like, I think everyone's just trying to figure out what they can to get people interested, and no one knows. And maybe, I mean, Scotty Tancrime just talked about this, is maybe the entire concept of a release date, like that you like advertise ahead of time, might be extinct soon, because the only reason release dates exist is when you have a large scale distribution to get something in the store by a certain date, so all stores have this same fair chance to sell the record. But now that that's not a concern anymore, the concept of release date is somewhat arbitrary, unless you use it as a focal point to get people interested in your record before it comes out. So who knows? Who knows?
Well, you know what? That dovetails into the next two stories that we're going to talk about perfectly. So we're going to jump right into talking about Record Store Day 2020, which was, of course, nixed because of everything that's happening. So they had initially moved it to June 20th was supposed to be the day. And now that day has been canned. And what they've gone and said is that Record Store Day 2020 is now going to morph into this thing that spans over 3 consecutive months, where on August 29th, September 26th, and October 24th, each of those 3 dates are going to be an RSD drop, which is, I don't know what that means actually, but I'm assuming that means that on each of those days, a different hunk of the releases that were supposed to come out on Records Day proper are going to be made available. Now let's be optimistic and assume that you will be able to, on August 29th, September 26th, or October 24th, actually go to a record store to buy one of those records and not just be ordering it on the internet. But does this make sense to you? Like,
I have a very direct answer to this. First of all, this year's, I've gone back and forth on Record Store Day. Does it actually benefit the smaller stores? Does it hurt them? And also, sometimes the releases are lazy, sometimes they're great. This year, I think the releases are great. I think this is one of the best years of interesting records and records that are coming out that not a ton of people would want, but a few people would want, so they can actually make this weird, special thing, just because there are a certain dedicated group of maniacs that will go out and get this weird, special records. I think the selection of records this year is great. When I first read the news, I was annoyed. I'm like, oh, man, like, I love Record Store Day. I'm like, man, I don't want to do it. I don't want to get up at 4 a.m. 3 months in a row, you know. But on the other hand, I'm thinking, you know what, though? Like, I know for a fact a lot of small record stores are hurting bad. My local record store is hurting bad. I'll give a shout out. Electric Avenue Westchester, hurting bad. A lot of the Philadelphia record stores, hurting bad. And so if this gets them a little bit more income than they would have gotten, and hypothetically it might, because the more time you're in the record store, the more you are likely to buy stuff, you know. Now, could it backfire and people just say, I'm not even going? You know, it could be, but hopefully it'll work out. So if John being slightly annoyed and losing a little bit of sleep over the course of 3 months is what it takes to keep record stores open, then I'm all for it.
If you have to get up early for 3 months,
that's right. That's how much I love record stores, Adam.
I don't know, Hallie, were you a Record Store Day person? Would you go fight the lines and the crowds, or?
Nope. I think it's great. I mean, I think but I agree with John. There's a lot of really good stuff this year. I don't know. Yeah, I think maybe maybe it's better to spread it over 3 days, like John's saying. Maybe it's better for record stores. Maybe it's like, I don't know, is it like Thanksgiving? Like you eat so much freaking food on Thanksgiving and you're like, why did I didn't need to eat all that food? Maybe it's like, I don't know what I'm talking about. Maybe it's, but you know, it is kind of this, like crazy, like frenzy on record store day. Maybe it'll be like more, maybe it'll be something more. I don't know what I'm talking about. Never mind.
I mean, like, but to totally butcher the analogy, right? But I guess they risk is like breaking Thanksgiving into three less satisfying Thanksgivings. One of them is only serving potatoes, and you know,
three great meals where I don't feel like disgustingly sick afterwards.
Which makes me wonder, like, how much are they going to try to like curate the particular records that show up on each of those drops to actually get people into the store? Because if they have like two months of you know, kind of potpourri, and then the third month is just like nothing but Fleetwood Mac reissues, then you know, it's going to be kind of weighted in a strange way. But yeah, I don't know. So anyways, that's what's happening. I assume this means that the Black Friday record store day is probably not as big of an event as it was, given that they're getting right up to the line with this one.
The underground word, and this is only possibly accurate, is that there won't be record store day Black Friday because of the three record store day drops.
Which kind of makes sense to me, right? It was already sort of like, it was, you'd look at the Black Friday one and go like, all right, I'll give it to you, but I don't know if we need this, but we probably don't. But listen, I don't know if I should say that. Like you guys and your Black Friday, that's a big.
Listen, any chance I have to get rare Gwar albums, rare Alice Cooper records, rare David Bowie records, I'm all for, Adam. I'll even pay you inflated prices. That's how much I care, Adam. That's how much I care.
All right, so I'm going to talk now about an artist, and I'm going to play a song. This is my really long lead into a song that I'm about to do, but it crosses over with the topic that we were just talking about, which was, you know, when you release stuff and how you release stuff, and does the release date of things even matter anymore? So there's an artist that is a local artist for me, but is known abroad. It's not just one of my weird little, you know, Canadian garage bands or anything like that, named Daniel Romano. So Daniel was back in early 2000s, I guess is to peg it, about 10 years ago, let's say. Daniel was a member of a band from Welland, Ontario, called Attack in Black. Attack in Black had a few moderate kind of radio hits in Canada with a record called Marriage that came out. And they were a slightly, let's say rootsy tinged pop punk band. So something in the vein of, say, like of the Weaker Thens at the time, or even like maybe more accurate with the sound of that record to be a band like, say, like Ninja Gun from the States. But anyway, so Attack in Black had some momentum. They had some hits, but it was one of these bands where like everyone that was in it had ambitions of sort of going off and making their own music, and they were not at all satisfied with being a band that was going to go through the machine and have, you know, album cycles and all this kind of stuff. And they really quickly kind of went off the rails and started recording their own stuff that was not poppy at all and was increasingly strange and folky and weird. And then, you know, doing that for a few years, they broke up. They created this little, commune of like five or six people that all record on each other's records. And in the past 10 years, they've released something like, it must be two dozen albums or something that have come from those people under at least as many names and different combinations and all this other stuff. So Danny is the one that had the biggest career out of them. He released a couple of alt country feeling records that got pretty big. And then they quickly dovetailed from this really, really genuine sort of like 40s sounding at certain points country stuff into this kind of druggy 70s sound, and then just like all over the place. And then in between all this, he formed a punk band called Ancient Shapes that he tours around with. So so Daniel in normal times would release 2 or 3 records a year, it felt like. And completely according to his own muse, not, I'm sure, frustrating anyone that was ever trying to market them's plans. He would just do. He was on tour with his live band, and this live band is called The Outfit. And they were on tour in the U.S., touring behind a live record that they just released on You've Changed called OK Wow. And the live record came out on, let's say like the first week of March, maybe. And they were on the road in the States, and then all the COVID stuff happened, and they were, you know, the whole thing was canned. They all had to come home. And then as part of crossing the border back into Canada, he legitimately had to like go and do one of those like 14-day quarantines that seems really quaint at this point, but you know, go and hole up and not go into the rest of society for 14 days. Now, for some people that means you sit around and you play Nintendo and watch Netflix for 14 days. But I'm pretty sure Danny lives in a barn full of recording equipment and just records stuff in isolation anyways. So him being forced to do that is just saying, go make a bunch of records. And that is kind of what's happening out of his camp. So out of between like mid-March and now, he's released probably 26 songs across 3 releases. So he put out a full length that was called The Visions of a Higher Dream. That was kind of an alt country feeling thing. He just put out another full length, which is like a live record called, what was it called? Losing It? I don't know. He has another live record that he just released that's coming out probably tomorrow to be timed for the whole Bandcamp thing. That is another 10 songs, and it's like in the full-on country mode. And then in between those two things, he went and they put out an EP of punk songs, power pop songs, called Super Pollen. And that's the one that I want to talk about right now. So Super Pollen is Danny in one of his punkier modes. He like oscillates between being in a punk band and being like wearing a Stetson hat and sequins. So this is him in his punk mode. He's got his brother Ian Romano playing drums, and Ian's from Attack and Black as well. He's played on all of his projects. And then it's Jonah Falco and Mike Halichuk from Fucked Up. So the two Romano brothers and then the two guys from Fucked Up, they go and they release this EP all of a sudden of you know, pretty satisfying little power pop songs. And there was no indication from anyone involved that it was in the works or anything like that. And when he was asked about it, he said something like, I have no idea when any of this was recorded and I don't remember doing it. So, but it's just like, as far as I'm concerned, he has a drawer in his barn somewhere that must be like full of master recordings of things that the world is never meant to hear, but they just made for whatever reason drives him. They made, and now all this stuff is just kind of flooding onto the internet as he's in quarantine. So Super Pollen is the EP that is, yeah, the two guys in Fucked Up, the two guys from Attack and Black. It's not the first time that anyone that's involved here has collaborated with each other. Ian played drums for Career Suicide when their Machine Response LP came out. John, are you aware of which Fucked Up dude is in Career Suicide?
Jonah Falco's in Career Suicide.
Right. So yeah. So Falco and Ian were part of that band together. So I'm assuming this must come from that era, but I don't know. Who knows? So in any case, here you go. This is Danny Romano. One of his 3 records that he's released in the past month worth of time. I'm going to play a song from Super Pollen. And if you want to like talk about people being prolific, this is also then clocks in as the 3rd side project from Halichuk and Falco in the past few months, because they had Jade Hairpins, which we talked about actually the last time Hallie was on the show, which is their, mm-hmm. which is their like half UK based synth pop band. They have Masterpiece Machine, which is a three-piece industrial. I mean, we talked about Ministry. They're kind of like a Ministry-influenced three-piece industrial act that has vocals from Riley Gale of the Dallas thrash band. What is it? Power Trip? Is that
Power Trip?
Power Trip. Right. So they had those two, and now they have this one. So this is also the third thing that they've released in the last month. So I have to say, as someone that is stuck sitting around in their basement listening to music, this is all great for me. But I'm just so curious about these people that like are just, you know, record and release and record and release and record and release without any particular mind to the marketing plan with regards to that stuff. How they're dealing with all this. And this is I guess, you know, one piece of evidence to show what one of those people are doing. So anyways, this is Super Pollen from Danny Romano. The song I'm going to play is called Still Hate Cops, because still hate cops. Here you go. John, that was the longest song introduction I've ever done. I feel very good about that.
That was long, man. That was long. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm going to you straight. That was long.
I'm looking at the waveform, and it's just like I took over. So, anyways, let's continue. Let's talk about let's talk about some stuff that's not me talking. I don't even know where my notes are now. I've lost them because I went down my link world. Fake names. That's what we're going to talk about first. Okay, so. We talked about the supergroups there for a second here. So there's another one of sorts that is out there. The band is called Fake Names. It is a band that includes Brian Baker, who is, of course, from Minor Threat and Dag Nasty and Bad Religion. Michael Hampton, who played in SOA and Embrace and One Last Wish. And then Johnny Temple from Girls Against Boys and Soulside. And on the vocals there, you have Dennis Likeson from Refused and The International Noise Conspiracy and... How do you pronounce his bunch of consonants band here? What is it?
Oh, Invision?
Invision? I don't know.
Yeah. Invasion?
This is why we have vowels. So anyway.
Isn't that the thing that you put on your teeth? Like Invision? Like straight out your teeth?
Invisalign.
Invisalign?
Invisalign. That's Invisalign.
So the band has a new single out. It is called Being Them. It comes off their self-titled debut, which is out on May 8th on Epitaph Records. And so you can find it on YouTube or wherever else you go listen to music. But any thoughts on fake names?
I feel liked it. It was like more melodic than I thought it was going to be, which is not to say that I wouldn't have liked it if it wasn't melodic. But yeah, it was more, it was like definitely more like Bad Religion than like Minor Threat, I thought. But I thought it was good.
John, what's your read on something like this? Is it, do you have any particular, like, I've never heard you talk about Brian Baker in particular, but he is from an era.
That's not true.
He's from an era that I feel that like you are a big fan of.
No, remember we had a small beef with Brian Baker once on Twitter. What was it about? It was a playful beef. I wish I could remember what it was. I'll see if I can before the end of the show.
Were we in the right?
We were in the right, because we put something like funny online that was, it was like, it might have been an April Fool's thing, and then he like out of the blue like dissed us big time. He's like, "Punk News, you don't know shit. You don't know anything about Punk News, you know." And then it like wasn't even like what's the word I'm looking for? It wasn't elegant. It was just like, "You guys stink," you know. And so I was like, Brian Baker, we love you. Why are you hurting our feelings? And then like he didn't get that I was still clowning on him. And he's like, "Well, you're a bunch of assholes." And I was like, "So I'll look that up." So, anyways, but I love Minor Threat. And honestly, it underscores this, Adam. Here's the point of it all: you should not expect artists that you like to be your best friend, because it is not their job to be your friend. And honestly, true art that expands your mind won't always come from people that think like you or would be a good friendly match for you. Rather, your mind is more likely to be challenged, opened, and expanded by people that think differently than you and might not like you. And that's the importance of Brian Baker. I know he doesn't – actually, I think he does like us. I think I smoothed it out, because I don't want to get I don't need to be fighting with Brian Baker. But that's the point, Adam. You shouldn't look to your favorite bands to be your best friends, because that's not their function. Your friend's job is to be your friend. Your favorite band's function is to be interesting artists. And perhaps – the age of social media has somewhat diminished that barrier, and I don't think that might not be a good thing, Adam.
All right. Well, there you go. Any thoughts on this? Any thoughts on fake names?
Well, you know, I've never used Invisalign, but I've heard good things about it, that it straightens out teeth pretty good. No, listen, you know – the thing with Refused is people love Shape of Punk to Come. And I was like, it just sounds like, you know, modern hardcore with some techno tracks between it. But then I did see Refused live and I kind of got it. I thought Refused was great live. And to a degree, that sets Refused up to a very difficult task. They put out this groundbreaking, somewhat weird record. So what do you do going forward? Do you just make straight up punk? Or do you just get weirder and weirder until your music, I guess, is always challenging and never quite, I guess, it's always a wrestling match to engage with the music. It's not something you can just rock out to. And so with this track, I thought it was all right, but I wasn't necessarily challenged by it. And so I'm not a Refused hater, but I'm not necessarily a fan either. So when I hear Refused, from my perspective, is, okay, let's hear something challenging, daring, and weird, or, you know, unique, like International Noise Conspiracy. To me, this was just kind of a modern punk jam, which man, you know, I mean, listen, from the John Gentile perspective, Dennis is in a lose-lose situation. If you put something out super whacked out and weird, I'm going to be like, oh, yeah, it's weird and whacked out, but I don't really feel like spending the time to figure out what it is. But then if he puts out a reassuring track like this, I'm like, well, why am I listening to this and it says something else? So, you know, it's on me, Adam. It's on me. I need to really go back and, you know, learn about myself. I need to learn who I am before I talk about others.
Ooh. I remember I like Shape of Punk to Come, you know, like everyone did, I think, during that era. You know, if for nothing, the video for New Noise was just sort of like omnipresent at the time, and was just like so fucking threatening and dangerous feeling. And I just like, that is like one piece of media that was so well done at kind of selling that band, like outside of their country, but outside of the circles and everything that would have normally listened to that kind of music. I remember that actually one of the first things that happened with Punk News was when it was just sort of like me and Aubin and a few other people that were doing things, is Aubin bought me really early on a copy of Songs to Fan the Flames of Discontent, which was the record that came out, what, before New Noise or before Shape of Punk to Come, and in which they were maybe a little bit more of just like a straight up hardcore band at that point. And Aubin was such a fan of it, and it like that kind of music was informing so much of the kind of stuff that he wanted Punk News to write about back in the day. And I remember he bought me a copy because he's just like, oh, you have to hear this. Like, it's so good. I was a really big fan of the International Noise Conspiracy back when they were around. And it was just one of those right time and place bands for me. I was really into the stuff that that G7 Welcoming Committee was putting out, the label that was run by the Propagandi guys. And I ate up everything that they were involved in. And they released records from a handful of Swedish bands at that point. They released a Randy record, and Noise Conspiracy was among them. And I was into that. And they were one of those bands I was like collecting their like little CD singles and all that kind of stuff. But then I fell off. I never got on board with the Refused reunion stuff. And this, it's fine. It sort of sounds like an alt rock song to me. And in kind of like a 90s vein, and that's okay, but I'm not hooked in, but I'm curious. I'm fake names curious.
November 16th, 2017. Punk News posts: Fallout Boy releases new video for Hold Me Tight or Don't. Brian Baker, angered by this, responds, "This is not Punk News." And then Punk News responds, "Good point, Brian. You open the door to an interesting discussion, in fact. The question being, should we rigidly determine what is and what is not punk, or should we cover things on the periphery in hopes to attract those fans to better bands, such as Minor Threat and Bad Religion?" And then he said, F you.
which is the answer that I would want for making that condescending horseshit of a response. Oh shit! I'm glad you have that for the archives. That's good.
So wait, Brian Baker not a fan of Fall Out Boy.
That's not our fault. Fall Out Boy is not our fault, John.
No, I mean a lot of things are, but not Fall Out Boy. We won't accept blame for that one.
All right, so let's blast through some of these other stories and things like that came out. So, I don't know. How do I read this one without sounding snarky? I feel like I want to sound snarky, but... Okay, look.
We've been somewhat negative this episode, Adam. I think we need to be positive. I mean, we've been kind of negative, you know?
No.
I don't want to be the hate cast. I actually want to be the fan cast. But with, you know, with...
I'll talk about Daniel Romano for 45 minutes, but listen. I liked Tiger King just as much as the rest of y'all did.
It depressed me.
Sure, it made me feel things. Sometimes I laughed at it. Sometimes it was depressing and horrible. And sometimes it made me do this very smug thing that people that don't live in America do, which is we go, "Oh my God, that's happening in America. Jesus, what's wrong with them?" Right? But we did all those things. We had all of the emotions that we were supposed to have. We had a good time. Everything's fine, but the offspring have decided that we can't leave a dead tiger lie without beating it a little bit. And they've released a cover of the song "Here Kitty Kitty," which is a song that was originally by a band called the Clinton Johnson Band, which is, I guess, the band that Ghost wrote all of
Ghost performed.
Basically, they're the band that performed all of the stuff what's his name?
Joe Exotic
attributed to himself and recorded music videos for. So the Offspring have got together and they recorded a cover of "Here Kitty Kitty" in a fairly authentic-y cover too. Dexter's doing. He's got a good drawl that he's kind of put on to perform this, and they recorded sort of a goofy video that goes along with it, and I don't know what I'm supposed to feel. I think that's what I'm most mad about, John. I don't know what I'm supposed to feel. Is this supposed to be like hilariously sarcastic, or am I supposed to feel sort of annoyed that the offspring couldn't just leave this alone.
I mean, you didn't know what you felt because you couldn't feel anything, because who cares about any single aspect of any of this? Who cares about any single aspect of any of this thing? I mean, listen, you know me. I'm going to be kumbaya about it. I love that people are making shit. I never have a problem with people making shit. If they wanted to do this, I have no problem with it. But my God, I don't care.
That's, yeah, I feel like that is largely my read on it. As I'm like, who is this for?
Yeah.
Like it's like making a song about fidget spinners or something, right? Like, I don't get it, John. Are we supposed to enjoy this? Because like, it's a dumb thing to cover. I mean,
I enjoyed it, Adam. What do you think of that? What do you think of that?
You did.
I'm not necessarily an Offspring fan. I don't own a single Offspring CD. I've never heard an Offspring album all the way through. However, I saw Offspring at some festival in Mountain View, California, and people talking, and it was fun, and it was funny, and I'm like, you know what? I can't hate the Offspring. I wouldn't say they're the best band ever, but they got some catchy tunes. They're up there having fun. They're making big bucks, but they're not hurting anybody. You know what I mean?
I'm not taking any of that away from them. I'm not even
Listen, Offspring is having wacky fun. I'm always down. The internet is the place for wacky fun. If you can't just put wacky, pointless fun on the internet, what's the internet for? Saving lives? Communicating with family members? No. Wacky fun. And listen, the interesting thing that I think about the Clinton Johnson song is that I actually think that, like, if you remove it from all the Tiger King stuff around it, I actually think the craftsmanship in the song is pretty impressive, to tell you the truth. I wouldn't go out and buy a 12-inch single. Actually, maybe I would. I would not go out and buy this if it was on CD. But I think it's fun and amusing. And I went, ha, 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 Offspring, you are doing a competent job at a song that actually I think is pretty well crafted. There's arguments on either side on whether or not the song is misogynistic or whether or not the song is truthful and people aren't looking, you know. All that aside, Offspring ain't getting into that because that's not what Offspring does. Offspring is here to have fun. They're having fun. They're not asking you to, you know, make this the number one track of the year. They're saying, here's something wacky we did, and I'm down for the wacky ride. I can't hang on the Offspring, Adam. I can't, you know? I watched their video for Why Don't You Get a Job. It was funny, Adam. It was funny.
Oh, I could hate on the Offspring all sorts of ways for that whole fucking era, but I won't. I'll let him have it. Okay, you recorded a thing. It's on the internet. We're all going stir crazy, so maybe this was worth everyone's time.
If anything, Adam, the Offspring, I will say, do deserve props for helping to finance some extremely punk releases that people might not know they finance because they're cool that way. That wouldn't exist without the Offspring.
Fucking the whole modern Epitaph Records wouldn't exist without the Offspring, right? So the money they made from Smash, and they made four people from Smash, you know, ended up putting out a lot of your band's favorite record or yours or whatever it is. So that's, you know, I will give them that. I will not. I have all kinds of minor grievances I could issue for the Offspring. I'm not going to do them right now. I just question whether
we needed this. No, we didn't need it. But so what? You know what I mean? So what?
All right. I'll leave it alone. I'll leave it alone. Not for me. I don't know who it's for, but it's not for me. John, we're going super long here. My drink is empty. We got a couple other quick media stories here that we're going to blast through. They're both John Gentile bands. So you take over. What's the deal here, and why should people care?
Okay, I'll blast through one in a second. Well, semi-blast through. The one we're going to blast through, Lotion. I've talked about this band a lot on the Punk News podcast. I love Lotion. Lotion is a synth-crust punk band that gets towards industrial, but I wouldn't say it's strictly industrial. On stage, they dress like commandos, and the one guy kind of acts like he's a robot, and they are crazy awesome live. They were super underground. They're somewhat growing. They put out this. They're putting out a single on the Sub Pop Singles Club. I dig this single. Hallie Bullet, anything to say about Lotion?
I think this is so funny that we're somehow having like a that this is like a running theme throughout the podcast, but I have in my notes that it sounds to me like a poppy ministry.
Well, that's a good thing, right?
Yeah, I kind of liked it. And also just shout out to this single series, because it's been great for years, and just recently they've put out so much good stuff. I like loved the, sorry, not to navigate away from Lotion, but like I loved the Julian Baker single that they put out, and the Shin single, that all that stuff has come out within the last 6 months. So yeah, this series is rad.
Hallie Bullock, do you feel as though the Sub Pop Singles Club, and I'm seriously not implying one way or the other, in the 90s, the Singles Club like was driving the cultural discussion. Nirvana, mm-hmm. Melvins, Dwarves, L7, they all put out Sub Pop singles, and it was kind of a thing. In 2020, the Sub Pop Singles Club, is it driving the cultural discussion, or is it just kind of a fun thing?
It's just kind of a fun thing, but I feel like, and like you can tell me what you think. I just feel like it's really indicative of just what's happened to music. Like, we just don't have any music that's just driving culture in the way that we did. We don't have enough music in common. Everything is so disjointed that I just feel like you don't have a band like Nirvana that everyone's talking about. Like, even if you didn't like Nirvana, I don't know who that would be, but if you didn't like Nirvana, you were still probably talking about them, or you at least knew who they were. Like, we just don't feel like we have almost like nothing like that anymore. Everything is very like fragmented. So yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's less a statement about like the series than it is about just like music as a whole and its like place in our society now. What do you think?
I agree with you 100%. I would hazard a guess as the reason for that is, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s culture wasn't as youth culture orientated. You know, TV shows were kind of aimed at middle-aged people. So were movies. And so music was kind of the one youth culture thing that young people, I mean, Headbangers Ball, or not Headbangers, MTV was the youth culture channel, and no other channels were really youth culture. Now, almost all channels are youth culture channels, you know. And so the music was, all the kids would huddle around that. But also, there's accessibility in that, like, the distribution channels, Nirvana is the band that will be on the shelves this week. And so everyone talking about Nirvana, because Nirvana is on the front, you know, is the front of the record store. That's not so true anymore. So as Hallie says, things are fragmented. And also, there's video games. There's apps. There's Instagram. I sound like a grandpa. But there's all these other things that young people are engaging with aside from music. Like I didn't come up with this thesis, but I agree with it. I heard this from multiple people. In the 60s, music was the thing that young people had. Like the Beatles. That was it. But now there's any number of things for young people to have. So music isn't the primary driving force that it used to be with regards to the cultural context. So I will say that was insightful of Hallie to explain the Sub Pop Singles Club that way. I hadn't thought of it that way, but I agree 100%. Last thing, perhaps as a reaction to current cultural, Run the Jewels, they've released a new music video. The new music video is for the song Oh La La, which has a beat by world-famous DJ Premier, and Greg Nice sings the refrain. Run the Jewels 4 is coming out who knows when, because they also famously just drop albums with no warning whatsoever. I thought this video was fantastic. I loved how it was kind of a choreographed dance thing. And also, I don't know if you can necessarily accuse hip-hop of this. Well, you certainly can to a degree. You know, starting with the Puff Daddy thing, like, a driving force of mainstream hip hop was money. Money's the greatest thing ever. Money's so great. I've got all these fancy cars. I make lots of money. I'm rich, you know. And that even continued through people like Migos or what the hell's his name? That guy that went to jail who was really insufferable. The guy that acted like a gangster but wasn't a gangster. Anyways, Run the Jewels is very interesting because they're a hip hop group that's saying, we don't care about money, or money isn't important, or money is an evil force. And so I really appreciate them making that statement. I do wonder how this sits with Boots Riley, because Boots Riley of the Coup, that was like his whole thing. And I think somewhat to Boots Riley's frustration, the coup never really broke through.
Although I would assume he's in a pretty happy place now because his debut movie did fantastic. So maybe he doesn't even care. But I would like to – I would wonder what Butch Riley thinks of the huge popularity and deserved popularity of Run the Jewels, who are a fantastic group. I'm looking forward to this album.
This video, I agree, John, is so good. This video is so good. Everyone is burning money. They're dancing in the streets. Like, I want to live in this. I want to live in the world that this video is in, where we like don't care about money anymore. So we can just like set it on fire and we all know the same dance moves and we can do them in a formation where we're only standing like 2 feet away from one another. Like, I loved this video. It made me so happy.
Yeah, it's strange how you can watch something and there's just like people interacting with each other and you're like, oh man, that would have been that'd be so great. Just like, yeah, this is super fun. I mean, I don't know how to sell it to the person that tunes into this show to listen to us fail at talking about X, but.
Well, I'll tell you, the underlying message is exactly the same as Crass. It's the exact same message.
So, I mean, you can jump on it from that perspective. So, I don't know. I'm convinced that your message based vector on music is not what the people want, and they're like, you know, they're gonna tune in and be like, "Where's the guitar?" And that's gonna be the problem. I don't know. This is fun. You should watch
it. I disagree. I loved it. I don't know. I'm in the John camp of like, it is fucking punk rock to set fire to a pile of money. I think this absolutely is punk. I think it counts.
And thank you. I appreciate it. Also, Killer Mike wearing a Joy Division shirt. Is he wearing a Joy Division shirt because he loves Joy Division? Or is he doing the thing where just everybody wears a parody of the Joy Division image? I'd like to find out.
Tune in next week when we go through Mike's wardrobe. John, what are you playing to close off this show?
Well, listen, I truly didn't know this was a controversial opinion until a couple of years ago. I love live albums. Turns out most of the punk rockers hate live albums, and I don't understand why, man. Like, to me, like, the live context might be the optimal way to see a band, and so a live album which captures that is almost as good. And I love live albums. The best kind of live album is when a band puts out a live album just after – well, the very best kind of live album is when a band puts out a amazing album after years of being in a band, because they're re-energized, they're charged up, they're applying their new formula to their old sounds. Some of the most famous examples of amazing live album bands do that. Rolling Stones, Live in Texas, 1978, after Some Girls, where they do almost all of Some Girls, the album, a bunch of Chuck Berry covers, and they punk up some of their older tracks. Another example, David Bowie, Live in the Nassau Coliseum, 1976, where he does almost all of Station to Station, and he takes a bunch of older tracks and does them in the Thin White Duke style as opposed to Ziggy Stardust style. And joining in that rarefied camp, Integrity, people call them metalcore. They hate being called metalcore, so you can call them heavy metal and punk. A very weird band about lead singer Dwight Hellion. His big thing is that humanity is a bad thing and that humanity is a plague upon the earth. And the only way to correct the mistake of the universe is to wipe out all humanity at once. That might be a little extreme. Maybe it is. But they just put out an amazing live album not that long ago called Howling for the Nightmare Shall Consume, which I talked about on the podcast a lot because it might be their best album. And that's saying something because they've got a lot of really good albums. Then, just like this past week, they put out a live album from that tour, which has a bunch of those tracks live and a bunch of the older tracks done in the newer frantic, crazy style. It's called Live at Northwest Terror Fest 2018. It's out now digitally only. I hope a physical copy comes out. We're going to play one of the tracks. We'll do the new live version of an old track. This is Integrity 2018 doing Judgment Day from 1988. Yeah.
All right, that was integrity. If you want to send us email, you can do that at podcast@punknews.org. If you want to find us on Facebook, you can go onto Facebook and search for Punk News Podcast, and we will show up. The page is called The Punk News Podcast, because there may or may not be others, I guess, and we like the definite article. Hallie, thanks for joining us from your mountain compound.
Always good talking to you guys.
John, I'm tired. I'm going to bed.
Good night. Sleep tight.